see whether we'll have an issue for tomorrow or not. We'll figure things out. We'll see how far we get today. So first, let's try to lay out some of the questions and at least get a sense of what some of the issues are. Los Achmod is clearly somewhat of a mysterious issue. What makes it mysterious? Or what might make it mysterious? What kind of questions could prompt you right away to try to figure out what's going on with Los Achmod? Michael?
It involves an emotion.
Right, so on the surface, that certainly seems to distinguish it from other Isurim. It sounds like it is addressed to an emotion. Now, we'll see that that's not clear that that's the case, but that's what the language sounds like. And that definitely is unusual. Is it inherently problematic? Maybe. I mean, maybe you could say that it's not problematic. It's different, but let it be different. Maybe the Torah does prohibit emotion. What would be the problem? Why is it surprising to address an emotion? Yes, Mary? Oh, that's one reason, right? I was thinking of two reasons. That's definitely one of them. One is that we often prefer precision when it comes to Isurim and Mitzvos, and this does not lend itself to visibility and empirical analysis and precision if you can't see it happening, and if there's no evidence that it has happened. And as we'll see, it's not necessarily the assumption that that's the case, but if that's how it would be defined, that would trouble us perhaps. What else? What other reason is there why this might be a problematic kind of prohibition if it's emotionally driven? Think of any other reasons? Well, what about control? Right, so if we're going to say that it's about how you think about something, so to what extent are we able to ask people to control their thoughts? And this particularly is a broader Torah issue, or thoughts or emotions. I was actually just reading, this is well known, I was reading about the famous white bear study. They tell people don't think about a white bear, or tell the experimenter when they finish thinking about a white bear. So by definition, they can't do it, because the more you're told not to think about it, so you're going to think about it by its very nature. So controlling thoughts itself is a difficult pursuit. And in general, we're talking about not thoughts, but emotions. So it's a question whether or not we can regulate emotions. And it's often been posited, particularly within the Rambam, and we'll see how the Rambam fits in for this purpose, that the Torah doesn't per se prohibit emotions or midos. I'm not saying those are the same thing, but they're in perhaps a comparable category for this. That maybe emotions and midos, we are interested in them. The Torah and Judaism is interested and has preferred thoughts, emotions, and midos. But nonetheless, maybe the Torah doesn't operate that way. Right, what do we mean? Like, for example, Rav Soloveitchik has developed this thesis a number of times. I think we spoke about it a little bit the earlier part of the year before Rosh Hashanah. It comes up for a lot of things that are relevant to that period of the year. So, for example, Simchas Yontif. Rav Soloveitchik famously commented, it's written in a lot of places, that the Torah says, V'samachta v'chagecha. So it sounds like we are being told how to feel. We are being instructed to have a certain emotion. But it may be that that's not practically what the mitzvah is. That maybe the mitzvah practically is the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the Karbanos, and nowadays either on the level of the Reis or the Rabbanan, to have Basar V'Yayin, new clothes, candy for the kids, certain external vehicles that are physical and demonstrable that represent how the mitzvah is actually played out. So yes, the Torah tells us what sounds like don't worry, be happy, sounds like it's an emotion. And it's not like that's irrelevant. Yes, that is our goal. We are interested in provoking simcha. But we might also be saying that humans can't be commanded, turned on, turned off, be happy, be sad. So if there's a mitzvah, what it means is do these actions that are associated with simcha, so that ultimately we can hope it'll bring about the simcha. So the key of ha-mitzvah would be the simcha, nachanami. But the Torah will formulate it more in the sense of doing something that is associated with that, Aaron.
Isn't that the Rambam Forish by behalf that Shem Kethel reason that it's do actions which lead you to?
That would be another example, right? So
what's the Chiddush Rav Soloveitchik's, isn't that?
Yes, well, you're right, it is more explicit in that context, but then applying it to these other settings and saying it as a broad policy within the Rambam. And other Rishonim might disagree. It's been argued that Rabbeinu Yonah has a different understanding. And the truth is, you could probably find some Rambams also, which would throw a little bit of question into this. But there is room to say that in general, even if the Torah is revealing that we're interested in a specific attitude, a specific midah, a specific frame of mind, nonetheless, as a book of mitzvos, a mitzvah is not going to be feel this way, think this way, have this personality trait. It will be do this action or don't do that action, which is associated with some positive or negative trait. So therefore, maybe that is an inherent problem with lo sachmod, and therefore that may either be unusual or may force us to define the isser in some way that moves away from that kind of model. So those two issues seem to be present in lo sachmod, and of course, what will stir the pot even further is that even if we are able to clarify these issues in terms of lo sachmod, then as soon as we finish doing that, what happens? We find we have to deal with lo sasaveh, which is even harder from that perspective. And that's also why the Rambam, for example, is going to be even further problematic, because maybe I can, to our satisfaction, clear up all our issues. When it comes to lo sachmod, we're still stuck with figuring out lo sasaveh, which is even more emotionally phrased, and set forth that way in some of the Rishonim, so that creates a difficult position as well. So that also will tie into the question that maybe we could also make a distinction, and this is just speculative, tell me what you think about this, but the fact that lo sachmod is one of the Aseret HaDibros, would you think that that gives us any license to understand it in a way that's not necessarily the same for elsewhere in the Torah? In general, the question, right, is there any significance to the Aseret HaDibros? How do we deal with that? The rest of the world thinks of Ten Commandments by Benjamin Blatt. He wrote in one of the volumes that we published, Mitoch Ohel on the Parshios, that the wide, the Ten Commandments is a misnomer. That we felt that it's really the Christians who use that phrase, the Ten Commandments, the Torah, of course, doesn't call them Ten Mitzvos, calls it Aseret HaDvarim, we call it Aseret HaDibros. But the language of Ten Commandments, which creates the impression that there are Ten Commandments only, and obviously that's not our view, is a misleading term. She wrote a whole article about that. So in general, it's a question, what is the purpose of highlighting Ten Mitzvos out of the Torah? Now, at the end of the day, it's a mitzvah anyway, so we have the same kind of question, but it's worth asking, is there any specific relevance to something being in the Aseret HaDibros? And within that, could you hear it sad, let's say in terms of the question just a second ago, about it being more emotionally based and the like, could you see it sad to have a broader understanding of lo sachmod as opposed to hear it somewhere else? What I'm getting at is, let's say if you were to say that the whole reason the Torah formulates Aseret HaDvarim and the ten mitzvos or ideals or principles, however we want to interpret it, if let's say you take a Nachmanidean position, you know that the Ramban has an essay, which other Rishonim agreed with as well, that all of the 613 mitzvos are essentially summarized or headlined in the Aseret HaDibros. So maybe we could say that lo sachmod has something about it which doesn't focus on a specific action so much, but it reflects a mindset which is at the root of many other prohibitions. And therefore, it's particularly valuable within the context of the Aseret HaDibros, which is looking to give a foundational summary or headlines of the whole Torah, and we're less concerned about whether it manifests itself as a practical mitzvah in the way other mitzvahs do. It's just a thought. But the interpretations of Los Achmod in a more emotional or intellectual way, maybe one could argue that specifically within the context of Aseret HaDibros, that's a little bit more appropriate. Ellie?
But couldn't you also take the Nachmanian approach and then say if Los Achmod is a category, then it does open up mitzvahs to have emotional to dictate emotions?
Maybe. Yeah, that's definitely one way to pursue it, and I think there are a lot of possible avenues to take with this question, and that's a valid one too. But I think you could also say that even if in general we were hesitant to see mitzvahs that way, within the context of the Aseret HaDibros, and again, we can't hide from the fact that both from the Gemaras and from the Rishonim and the codification, well, Sakhmon is still a mitzvah, it's not any different because it's there, but still, maybe those mitzvahs which are in the Aseret HaDibros, maybe we're more interested in how they set a foundation for other things than in terms of how they direct physical behavior. And maybe it gives us a little bit more room to look at it a little bit differently or to understand why the Torah conveys it over there the way that it does. Aaron, you had a comment?
Same thing.
Okay, so yes, again, that's certainly a valid approach. And we still have to deal with the fact that it's a mitzvah anyway, regardless. Clearly it's brought in all the Monihai mitzvos, and clearly the Gemara here that makes it sound like it's something you're over in the technical sense, so there's no question that it's related to as a normal mitzvah, but just it's interesting, the broader question one could ask about the Aseret HaDibros and how they play in. So for example, the famous comment of Ibn Ezra, which actually didn't put on the Gemara Makomos, but maybe you're familiar with it anyway, because it's very often quoted, so it doesn't help the issue in terms of a Maisa, this comment, but it's tells you a yesod that's very true and very fundamental and very valuable in the context of how we live our lives. So maybe there's more room for that in the Aseret HaDibros. What am I talking about? Ibn Ezra says that why does the Torah, for example, give us this hisser of Vosachmod Eishes Re'echa? What does it mean? What's the intent of the Torah when it says don't covet your neighbor's wife? And he asks a famous question also from the translation, what does it mean to covet? Not a word we use anywhere else. And so what is that word meant to convey? So he gives a mashal that maybe it's a little bit less resonant to Americans, but certainly to people in a monarchy, it's a little bit more relevant, and you can find their own mashalim that would match, that if a person, let's say, have a farmer, a simple villager, who falls in love with the princess. So he knows the way his society is constructed, there is zero chance he will marry the princess. It's simply not an option in the context of that society. Again, in America, we have a little bit of a harder time envisioning it that way. But in a monarchy, in the time of the Ibn Ezra, it's a little bit more understandable that you could see that there are things that you don't even bother desiring. You don't even bother having a title for them, because it's so off the map that it's not something to even think about. So the Torah is telling you, in the context of Eishes Re'echa, that not only should you not have an affair with your friend's wife, but you shouldn't even see it as a possibility. It shouldn't even be something that occurs to you could possibly happen. It should be as off limits as a person would feel towards the princess, that it's just simply inconceivable that your worlds will ever meet. It's simply not in the stars that anything could ever happen in that area. So too, this is how you'll relate to the concept of Eishes Re'echa. So there's no question, that's a very valuable insight. That's a very valuable perspective to have within the context of this mitzvah. It just doesn't answer our question of it's still not going to be a physical mice. It's still not going to be something that's going to help us define Los Achmod in that context. So is there more room within the Aseret HaDibros to see mitzvahs that way? Will that answer our question of why the Torah gives us that as a mitzvah? Maybe yes, maybe no. It's certainly a valuable comment, and maybe that itself gives a certain context. Aaron?
Maybe, I'm not sure if it makes sense, but maybe that, the way that the Torah spells it out is that's like the ideal, that should never be even in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
But how the mitzvah is carried out, l'maisa is actions that are brought towards those achmanim.
Right, which if you use that framework, so it works well, again, paralleling it to, let's say, Simchas Yontif or something like that. So if the Torah really just wants us to eat meat and drink wine on Yontif, why doesn't it just say, eat meat and drink wine on Yontif? So clearly there is any desire to get us to be happy on Yontif. That's the clear goal of the mitzvah. But at the same time, we're recognizing that it may not be within our control, that maybe a person simply doesn't have it within him to be happy. So we can't be mitzvah somebody to be happy. We can be mitzvah somebody to do things that bring towards happiness. But the mitzvah is phrased in the way that conveys what the goal is. So too, one could make the same kind of framework here and say that there are certain actions that represent chemda that we will prohibit, that we will use as the benchmark for the Asilo Sachmo. But what the Torah is trying to convey is that this is an attitude that we don't like. And that's why the mitzvah is phrased the way it is. Ellie?
Isn't there also a fundamental difference between a mandate and a prohibition in the realm of emotional commandments?
Presumably. But how do you want to articulate it? You want to say that, therefore...
Well, you might say that the, when the Rambam says that you can't, you know, mandate simply, you can only mandate the externalities that cause it, well, that's for a mitzvah saseh. If a mitzvah saseh, maybe you could potentially allow the prohibition of an emotion.
Is that so true, though? I mean, practically speaking, especially since most emotions you could phrase as positive and negatives, so the assumption that they're harder to control is probably true in both directions. And they both have positive and negative formulations, probably hard to distinguish, especially in the emotional realm. And although so say isn't especially because we're not talking about something physical. And if we're talking about doing things or not doing things, so then the difference between alos ase and ase becomes much more significant.
Right, but you could say that like it would be impossible for a person to feel something that is not in the spectrum of his emotional capabilities. But to say that if you feel something that you need to quell that, I think is
okay. That's a fair distinction. I just wonder how true it is practically. I wonder how true it is that a person can actually be commanded to make efforts. And this is an interesting discussion as well. Did we talk about this as well sometimes? Actually, maybe during our session of Shul, we talked about this a little bit. So, for example, is there Nisr Gaiva in the Torah? Is there Nisr Kass in the Torah? What does that mean? You know, these are clearly presented, especially by the Rambam, as Nidos Rosh Hashanah. The question is, can you count it as an Isr? The Rambam has the mitzvah of Alach to Bedracha. So there are some who talk about this, that maybe any efforts that you're making to address these Nidos, that's the mitzvah. So, for example, if there is an Isser of Gaiva, let's say, which some of the Rishonim count as an Isser, there are various psukim as possible in the Torahs. So what does that mean? That means that anybody who has a haughtiness is a violation like the eating treif? And what about the fact that people are born with certain tendencies they have to work on? So until then, it's as if they're eating treif, until they've conquered it, it takes a lifetime, like the Gomel Gaon said. Rishal Salatah said you could more easily finish Shas than undo one Yidah. So until it takes at least 7.5 years to undo a mitzvah. So until then, you're in violation the whole time. So there's different formulations. Some point out, especially if you use the Rambam's formulation, it always comes from the Malach to the Drapa. It's even easier to see it as a process. If you're working on it, if you're involved in the process, so then your fulfillment of the mitzvah, the Malach to the Drapa won't mean you have to reach the end point immediately. It means you have to be on the path. While others feel that even according to those Rishonim who formulated as Isurim, as an Isur to be a Baal Gaiva, as an Isur to be a Baal Kass, etc., that presumably, again, people have these tendencies naturally, so as long as you're working on it, so then you're not in violation of the Isur. So it's an interesting question, practically speaking, whether people can be commanded, let's say, to not have a certain feeling. I'm not convinced that that's true. I hear the difference in saying that if something is foreign to a person, they don't know how to experience it, so then that's even harder. But while it's there and they're telling you to go away from it, maybe that's easier. But still, at the end of the day, it still poses a fundamental question. Can you control your attitude? So before we run out of time for today, just to get certain basics on the table. So this feeds into, let's say, two basic questions, and we'll expand on it tomorrow. First of all, just what is practically the iser of los achmo? And even if we separate it from a machshava, even if we say that it's an action, and let's say we say it's an action that you do something and you end up with the other guy's thing, you're in violation of los achmo. There's still a basic question that is left open to interpretation there. What is that basic question? Basic machlokas rishonim. Right. Does it mean you have to pay for it? Or does it mean you have to not pay for it in order to violate it? Or if you pay for it, should we say you're not in violation? And our Gemara, which is what gets us into this whole sugya, is one of the major makoros for this issue, perhaps the major makor for this issue, but is very confusing. It has a line that you could interpret any way you want. The Gemara talks about, this is why our Gemara in the first parak above Messiah brings it up, on the bottom of Hayim and Aleph. So the Gemara, the bottom of Hayim and Beis, so the Gemara raises the question that somebody who's, let's say, kofer b'pikadon, if somebody has somebody else's property in their rishus, and we're concerned that maybe they are trying to keep it and claim that it was not there anymore, so should we believe them? Should we say that their shvua is meaningful if they are under such a suspicion? Or what about the fact that we're dealing with somebody who we think stole something? So the Gemara suggests that maybe he's not such a bad guy. Maybe he is trying to keep it, but he plans on paying for it, and he thinks that's not so terrible. That's not really stealing. He'll keep the item, and he'll give the person the value, so he's not doing anything so terrible, and therefore, if you make him take a shvua, he will still be susceptible to the pressures of a shvua. So the Gemara says, and that's what he's thinking. He's thinking he's more heter to himself. He thinks it's not so terrible if he pays for it. So the Gemara raises the question. So right away, just if you stop there, it sounds like the Gemara seems to define it, that if you scheme, essentially, if the Gemara had stopped with that sentence, you could read it as saying the person works out some kind of plan to chop somebody else's thing. That's the iser of los achmo. And therefore, the question then becomes, okay, so this guy knows that he's in violation of los achmod, so therefore he can't tell himself he's not such a bad guy, because he knows he's violating the Big Ten, he's violating the Aseres HaDibros. Why should we think that he's going to be so careful about not violating a shvua if he's willing to violate one of the Aseres HaDibros? So the Gemara responds to that, the very mysterious line, los achmod le'inshi b'lo dami mashmalahu. The people, right, the people out there, they think that what does los achmod mean? That it means you're acquiring something without paying for it. But if you are paying for it, you're not in violation of los achmod. So one could read that Gemara, probably the most intuitive reading of the Gemara is, yeah, those foolish inshi, they don't know what they're talking about. This is an amarasis that they think, that this is what people tell themselves, that, oh, they're not in violation of los achmod because they paid for it. But, of course, they're wrong, and you are in violation even if you do pay for it. But maybe the Gemara doesn't mean that. For example, which Rishon says explicitly the Gemara doesn't, possibly the one possible tarot, the Gemara doesn't mean that? It's a Tosfos, right? Tosfos in the Sanhedrin, it's on the list, right? I think Tosfos in Sanhedrin is really... Right, is it one of the, at least one of the answers of Tosfos and Sanhedrin says exactly that. That, yeah, maybe Inshu say this, and maybe they're right. There is a view in Rishonim like that. That maybe in a Hanami, that if they pay for it, they're not in violation of Los Achmo. That it's hard to know what this Gemara is trying to convey. Is it trying to convey that people are wrong when they say this? This is just an example of their Shvach Moraheter. Or maybe it's correct. Maybe this is indeed the case, that such a person who has the scheme would not be in violation of los achmod, and that's the answer to the question why he's neman on a shvua, because he's taka not violating an iser, if that's what he's doing. So it's a little bit ambiguous. And it is suggested that that answer in Tosus, the Tosus which explicitly says that that's what, how you could read the Gemara, it's one answer in Tosus, again in Sanhedrin, and that's what Fahimid Beis, that might be correlated with the Ravid, because The Ravid argues on the Rambam, which very much is a part of the whole discussion we've been talking about so far. So what does the Rambam say, and what's a little bit vague or internally contradictory about the Rambam? How's the Rambam's formulation go? Anybody want to help me out? Yeah, how does the Rambam define real sachmod?
What you gotta do the deal?
You force him, or you basically pressure him so much until he does it.
Right.
And then he says two things which seem to contradict each other. Right, in that same halacha. Sorry?
That there's no masa.
Okay, on the one hand he says it's ain bo masa, and therefore that's the reason why there's no malchus.
Right.
Right? We know that the rule is that any time there's a lav in the Torah, absolutely any single time there's a lav in the Torah, there's malchus, except for almost all of them. Right? There's so many exceptions. There's a long list of exceptions. You end up with very few lavin that are actually still on the list, but that doesn't change the fact that there's a klal, as a rule, that a lav gets you malchus, unless it's one of the many, 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 many exceptions. So among the exceptions is a lav she'ein bo maisa, that if you do an iser that is not action defined, so then there's no malchus. So the Rambam assigns that category to lo sachmo. But then he goes on to say something else, which seems to contradict that. What else does he say? Right, that the actual violation happens through an action, and he darshans from the pasuk. The pasuk means to tell you, chimud sheyesh bo maisa. So on the one hand, that sentence fits in very well to the way we characterized the Rambam a few minutes ago. If the Rambam has a general reluctance in general in the Torah to define an iser as an emotion, and in this context, it could be for either reason, either because it's not definable or because it's not controllable. So then it works out well that he says, yes, that here we have to have an action that represents the chibud. But then it's surprising that in the same breath, literally, he says that it's a lav she'ein bo maisa, there is no action. It has to have an action, but there's no action to the issue. Sounds like that's a difficult contradiction.
Can you say that the Rambam is saying that the Isser itself is really the thought, the Ein Bo Maisa, but since we're dealing with something, I guess, so related to Gzela, Ben Adam Adam, Adam, and you need Adam Chavero, that you need a sort of, I guess, a similar Dabar that he's gone over the point, so that would be the Maisa, that would be the Chiyuka.
So, but why do you need it to be Ben Adam Lechavero for that reason? I think the second half of the sentence has a lot to it, but why?
Because the only reason, nafkamina, I guess, would be whether or not you could have a base to enforce him to give back the money. But God always knows anyway, so he wouldn't need that. But if you have people...
Assuming that that's true, assuming that it is something he'd have to return, which is not so obvious by itself. But also, you wouldn't have to go so far as to say it's an Esser Ben Adam Lechavero that's relevant, because we talk about Malchus. So Malchus, theoretically, could have come in for any kind of Esser. So, yes, in terms of Beis Din doing anything for a Ben Adam L'Chaver or a Ben Adam L'Makom, right, so they need something objective. So that could be true by itself, right? And that may indeed be what the Rambam is saying, but not because necessarily because Ben Adam L'Chaver, but because if we're going to take any action in order to address it, we'll need to have some way to define that it's taking place, and therefore the only way we can define that it's taking place is that we actually see an action taking place, an action happening. Now, the Ravid over there disagrees. Right, and the Ravid says, what are you talking about? He's taking the guy's thing, that's a maisa for sure. And the Magid Mishnah comments this, and then others explain. The Stipler talks about this in his Birkas Peretz to Parshas Yisro. That's a sefer we introduced last week. Right, that you see here, there seems to be a machlokus between the Rambam and the Ravid as to what exactly is going on. And that iser may depend on whether you violate lo sachmod if you pay for it. That maybe the Rambam is assuming that even when you pay for it, you have an iser, and therefore the iser is not in paying in how you acquire it, because any purchase would be lo sachmod. So the iser is more in the machshava that led up to your ending up paying for it. While the Ravid perhaps correlates to Tosfos and Sanhedrin that the iser of lo sachmod is obtaining something illegitimately without paying for it. And therefore, it's only in such a context, the Ravid, if that's how he understands it. So you did that, you got something without paying for it, that's a clear maisa that we can nail you for.
Does the Ravid say that you both have to give back the item as well as pay for it? Or is just that?
So that, right, so that we'll have to figure out if there's any such concept of Hashabbos. I guess the question, to what extent this correlates to Gezeilah. So we're a little bit over time, and the Bible is Shulim, so I'll let everybody go. We'll continue this tomorrow. But one question you should be thinking about is, you know, so what is really the nature of this Isser, separate from the question of what actions or not, lack of actions are involved, but why is there such an Isser? Is this, as Jonathan raised the issue a minute ago, is it a Ben Adam L'Chavero, as it could very well be? Or is it not about Ben Adam L'Chavero? Maybe it's a Midos issue, or maybe it's somewhere in between. All three of those possibilities have what to be said for them. So, God willing, we will pick up from that point tomorrow on the various affected issues. All right, everyone should have a wonderful day. Please try to send